Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Folly Coffee Podcast. If you haven't done so already, I ask that real quick here, you just pause, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, and if you've liked any of the previous episodes or this episode, please give us that five-star rating. It helps us greatly. Thank you, and enjoy this episode. Hey, this is Rob, and this is episode 98 of the Folly Coffee Podcast. Let's get it brewing. All right, this episode officially makes you, Ye Vang, the most frequent Folly Coffee Podcast guest with your third all-time visit. I'm sure people hate when I use that button. It's really loud in the headphones.
I have it on my phone as a sound effect.
Yeah, it's really loud in my headphones, so I have to imagine if you're listening with headphones, it's probably really obnoxious that I have it cranked up that high.
It's a great sound effect.
Yeah, and ultimately, that's it. I like it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep doing it.
Bro, I haven't seen you in a while, man.
It's been a minute. Time is a flat circle.
It's been what, like 3 weeks? No, longer.
No, way longer than that.
Bro, because we used to see each other once a week, at least.
Yeah.
But like you got, you know, other obligations and stuff like that. And so you became. You
well,
know.
Just the fact, and also we just don't get along or like each other.
Absolutely.
So that's a big part of
but
it.
But then you went
to Peru.
Yeah, running drugs. I mean, getting coffee.
Well, technically, if coffee
is a drug.
Is a drug.
Yeah. I saw all your pictures out there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really just went out there for the content. I need some updated pictures. Nah, that trip was wild, man.
Yeah, it looked really cool, dude.
Did a previous episode on it, but we just learned so much. But wanted to have you on, and we are going to go about our general tomfoolery of we're going to debate our top five all-time favorite candies in the back half of the episode, but...
We needed something happy
to finish the episode. But one thing I've noticed with people that I meet with, especially you and I, is when we hang out, it tends to turn into a lot of venting. About this is what's going on in my life with the business.
I don't think it's venting. I call it it's a deep, passionate conversation that stems from our soul as we talk about what we're going through.
In business. And in life. We'll keep today's episode just about business.
We should do the next one. It's just life.
It just gets way too personal.
Yeah.
The thing is I mean this in the best way possible, but in hanging out or having conversations with people that haven't run a business or haven't done it, I think some of the things that you express can potentially be viewed as like, oh, you're just complaining. Like you're just complaining or you're like exaggerating or you're doing this and that. And so I find myself when I'm talking to other business owners, especially in food and drink, it tends to be a lot of the conversation because it's like, oh, so you get it. I can say this without the fear of being judged that we're complaining. But I was like, hey, let's do this on an episode because some of these things you might not even expect about a business owner, especially like, you're in a totally different category than what I do. Having been a chef and having through the pandemic, having to shift your restaurant to three different pop-up locations and having been at Sociable Ciderworks before that, while also planning your opening of V9 for this fall/winter. And then me being a purely CPG brand and having to shift around.
Would you consider yourself, you know, how we always use the word industry folks? Would you consider yourself an industry folk?
I think I'm fringe industry. I think
so I'm industry adjacent.
I'm industry adjacent, and I just kept kicking at the wall of all the people doing cool things. Unfortunately, this podcast has been kind of a cool way to like sneak in. So I've like almost snuck into the industry. Like Jeff, I would consider to be Folly Jeff, our head roaster. I consider him to be industry because he's the one actually roasting the coffee. He's
the one interesting.
Actually sourcing it. Whereas me, I'm like, I'm his hype man. So I'm like, I'm there, but I'm actually, when it comes to Folly Coffee, I'm not doing anything specifically coffee within the roasting process. And so I look at him and I go, Jeff's industry. And then I'm the one making sure people know about what he's doing. Yeah.
Interesting. I never thought about it that way.
And so I've always felt, this is probably me overthinking it, but I felt that I have to prove that I actually care a lot and I'm obsessed with this and what everybody's doing. And hopefully by this point, people know it's genuine. But I do feel I have to like push through that salesy vibe. I know I can give off a lot. Yeah.
What are we drinking here, buddy?
This is the Folly Coffee House Bean brewed by Brewmaster Brandon down in Apple Valley at the Filterra Brewing headquarters, shared with Bootlegger Kombucha. And it's a natural Ethiopian Yirgacheffe. A nice blueberry note, some milk chocolate, and cold brewed brings a bit more of that sweetness. Nice and balanced.
Yeah, I really like it. I really like it. You know, it's like we need a cold drink in here because your AC died or something.
Yeah, valve broke in the AC, so I've been casually sweating all day while, you know, randomly deciding this would be a good day to record three episodes. And, yeah, I don't smell good right now.
Yeah, I mean, next time have a green room for your people, you know?
Nah, I think the sweat brings out kind of a primal conversation. But I want to pose a question to you.
Pose me.
Before starting your business of Union Monk Kitchen, what did you expect running a small business to be like? That you can take that question as generally as you want, as specific as you want. But what vision did you have of, oh, this is what my life will be like running a small business? Yeah.
I never wanted to do it. Growing up, I would just work for people. And my parents, you know, they worked for people. So I never grew up. A lot of people, I think, who have run businesses have said, hey, like, I grew up and my mom and dad ran their own business and blah, blah, blah. You get to see a little bit of that. I never wanted to do it. I always thought that running a business was so hard. I just wanted to be a worker bee. You come in, you work, you're done, you're out. You know, and it's like, oh, if the company closes, yeah, you can go to the next one. You come in, you're done your work, you're out. Be the best at what you're doing. You know, and the same thing with restaurant. You know, when I worked in restaurants, it was like, hey, you work the line. This is your station. You rock it out. You do the best at it. And if the chef likes you, he moves you up to somewhere else. I never wanted to do it. The first time that we did our first pop up, I thought to myself, I laughed inside. I giggled inside because I was like, holy crap, people actually paid money to buy this food that we're making. Like, you know what I'm saying? It blew my mind. Like, wait, what? Like, because on the other hand, I totally make this for free at my house if you come over and eat it, you know?
But someone coming up with money and you're like, are you sure?
Yeah. So there was definitely that kind of, you know, you think through that process. But yeah, man, never wanted to do it. I never thought that was something I wanted to do. I don't know how to run books, you know, money wise. I mean, like I don't know how to do Excels. You know, to me, Excel was like a version of like the old school Minesweeper. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? Not what the kids are playing these days, but like old school Minesweeper game. Yeah. You know, just all these little blocks. I didn't know what any of them meant.
I also don't know how that works either. So
absolutely,
yeah.
And so I literally was like, I thought about it as a wallet. I have X amount of dollars in here. This is what I get to spend on food. And if the money that comes back into this wallet better match what the X amount was or have a little extra more. You know, that was it.
Yep.
And I had no idea what I was doing. My cousin Chris, we were just kind of doing things on the fly. Half the prep that we were doing was like in the back of my parents' house or my brother's house. Part of it was in his, like, part of it was at my uncle, aunt and uncle's, like, garage. We kept stuff everywhere. Like, I remember I had constantly had a Vitamix in the back of my old RAV4. You know, it was just, like, you know, a Vitamix. Never could find the lid for it. Stuff like that, and just hopped around.
So at what point did you start to view yourself as, oh, I'm a business owner, this is what I do now?
Honestly, bro, like, not until probably, like, a year ago.
And so when you started to view yourself this way, what did you start to picture? Oh, I'm a business owner now. This is what my life is going to be like. What do you picture? And then what are the biggest differences between that and what's the reality?
I would say when we had a staff that we started paying, you know, I mean, like we paid our staff, but before it was literally when we first started, it was like I come out with some cash, you know, after going to the bank, you know, with the check we got from the pop-up. And then I kind of like, either Venmo or be like, okay, here you go, guys. You know, and that was it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until like learning what like unemployment tax was and, you know, just all the HR stuff.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm like, holy crap. Like I spend more time figuring HR things. Even somebody, I think someone once approached me and goes, hey, do you have an application? I'm like, oh, frick, I got to put together an application. Like, and I literally went online into those like application template and literally just put our logo on it.
And then all of a sudden your liability insurance
changes. Yep, liability. I didn't even know what that was.
Comp insurance. Yep,
learned what that was. And it was one of these things where, and then I have a friend who she worked in HR and she's like really, really good at it. And I literally just like, hey, what should I be doing? And she's like, oh, okay. And she kind of like sat me down and went through everything. She's like, hey, do you have this? Do you have this? And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. Yeah. So, and it was, that's when I was probably about, I would say, I shouldn't say a year, probably about 2 years ago. That one, that hit me. And then that's also when we got like an official accountant, and our accountant was like doing our books, and she just like, I felt bad for her. I'm like, we should pay you a lot more.
I'm like, I'm so sorry. Here's my books.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Literally, I felt like I gave her like you know, those Cubs paper bag
yeah.
of just like receipts and just like extra papers, napkins in there, soy sauce packets. And I just gave her one of those and goes, here you go.
The thing you said about the wallet, literally the first thing I have written here about like the, so what I think what I pictured going into business is almost identical to what you said about the mm-hmm. wallet. You go, okay, well, I'm not like some funded huge business and we need to get this thing scaled quickly and we'll be in debt. I go, no, I'll use the money that I've been able to save through the yeah. jobs I've been working. I'll pay for the coffee. We'll roast it. We'll sell it. And then that money that we get, I'll use that to buy more coffee and we'll sell more. That is when I was very aggressively introduced to cash flow and also net 30-day terms.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means.
That's,
well, the net 30 I've figured out.
Yeah, so I mean, that is something that is a huge kick in the ass because mm-hmm. if you grow at all, and mm-hmm. this is probably a little bit more prevalent for CPG brands, but also as your pop-ups and as you're at Sociable and your audience mm-hmm. grows and you're selling more food, all of a sudden you're like, how is it that every bag of coffee I sell is profitable, but I don't have any money in the bank, absolutely. Even though we're selling more coffee? How does that work? Yep. And at that point, I didn't have an accountant either. And so now I have one. That was the biggest unexpected thing is I go, oh, I'll be able to figure that out. But my accountant, Courtney, shout out Courtney Mary, mm-hmm. she is available for independent contract work. I know she listens to this podcast, so hit me up for that contact info if you need a great, reliable accountant. But
yeah, if you need a great, reliable accountant, Joanna, she is so super, super sweet, and she is amazing.
There you go. Two great options.
Yeah, she's awesome.
I don't care what people say. This podcast adds value anyway. So that was a rude awakening because the second you start growing in any way, shape, or form, you get this beautiful little sprinkle dust of net 30-day terms. And I go, mm-hmm. what does that mean? You go, well, I just delivered all that coffee to one of my customers.
Mm-hmm.
They work on net 30-day terms.
Yep.
That means they have 30 days to pay me for that coffee they have. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, shoot. Well, I need that money to be able to pay for the coffee that we're going to roast. And then meanwhile, that order is getting bigger, thankfully.
Yep.
But that means the order that I need to place now mm-hmm. is larger than what I'm going to be getting paid 30 days from now.
Yeah.
And so ironically, unless you have a lot of money in the bank to start with, when you grow, cash flow combined with net 30-day terms and all these different payment agreements you have makes it so you don't have cash in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so any period of growth, you probably don't have very much cash in the bank unless you're selling something that's like insanely high margin mm-hmm. where that is going to float you.
Like drugs.
Yeah, that I mean, that could be maybe we'll talk off mic yeah, after yeah. this, but I yeah. think that could be the next route.
Because we know the DEA and FBI is listening in.
Yeah, I think yeah. that could be a good route after yeah. this, but that is something like the whole wallet thing. I go, yeah, mm-hmm. business is simple. You sell products, you make money, and yeah. then you use that money to pay for more of the things yeah. that you sell.
It's not like that.
No.
Like, and especially, so for example, like startup costs. Nobody ever tells you that stuff. Like, you know.
Dude, it's expensive just to try to be alive yeah. as a business.
Yeah. So, like, for example, like, one of the things that I think about is when we first started, we would do a lot of catering and events, and which we still do. And that's the lifeblood of most restaurants. That's where you get the biggest margins is catering, special events, special appearances, whatever. And I remember the day when I didn't have to say, hey, yes, we're going to do this event for you or, you know, party or whatever. It's, you know, I'm making up a number, but it's like $4,500 for, you know, and we didn't have to be like, can we take like half of that right now? Because like we knew we needed that $2,000 to be able to buy all the stuff we needed to buy, to rent all the stuff we needed to rent. But I remember the day when we didn't have to do that anymore. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I will admit that the first few big, like, you know, clients, guests, whatever we had that were, you know, hiring us to do these, we're family friends who they're like, hey, no, I'm just going to write you a check right now
yeah.
for the whole thing. You're like, oh my gosh. But then it's like, it's like you gotta ration that stuff off. Like that, like, you know, you got it, and then you're like, my bag is so full.
But that's the crazy part, is you would think, okay, so let's take two customers that are paying $2,000. You go, it's the same amount of money. It doesn't matter which customer it is, but you go, that person who's willing to cut you a check upon, like, the first, you know, the day of the event, or the day that they place the purchase, that customer becomes more valuable than the customer that's on those net 30-day terms.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's why, like, online sales are, like, even though it's less money, in a lot of ways keep the business afloat in more ways, because that money is being paid upon the
completion. Yeah, I mean, like, with the net 30 stuff that we have out there, it's money that's just floating. Like, it's like,
all floating.
Like in QuickBooks, it's on in QuickBooks, but it's like, like, still due, it'd be like 10 grand, and you're like, well, it's like, it's just an arbitrary number that's not in your account.
QuickBooks says that I made this money, but I don't have it yet.
Absolutely. And you can't go to vendors and be like, hey, can I give you QuickBooks money? You know, like, you know? So that's like one of the big things I had to learn. It's just like that. It's a whole balancing act, right?
Yeah.
You got to make sure you have enough money in the bank to be doing what you want to do, because that costs money. But to make more money, you got to spend money. You know, and then on the other hand, it's like keeping track of all this net 30 stuff that's just hanging out there. You know, I mean, I find myself going through QuickBooks and going, oh my gosh, here's a $1,500 check. Like, wait, who's paying? What, where did that, it's overdue. What's going on? You know?
And that's the other side, is I think my assumption going into business, you go, oh, everyone just pays. If we're working on net 30 day terms, they'll pay me on that 30th day. Dude, or earlier.
Can I tell you what I had to do?
Go on.
Okay. Before we had like a, you know, a catering special events director, or before we even had like other people, it was just me. I faked my own, like, so we had like an info at Union Monk Kitchen or unionkitchen.com or whatever.
I was really hoping you're gonna say faked your own death, and I'm like, this just got good.
Nah, I faked being my own like executive assistant, or I faked being my own like, you know, payment person, you know, and like I created a whole character in my head, and so I would email as her. You know, you know, it's like, oh yeah, she's a single mom, you know, you know, husband ran out on her, you know, he's like had an affair, she has got a little attitude, you know, but she doesn't put up with any BS, you know. And I just had her, I had like, so when I was typing out, like, especially like when the net 30 is over and we haven't seen a check yet, or sometimes, like, you know, when you do these events, it's like hey, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get that checkout, and it's like a week past, and you're like, shoot, I really need that money. So then you're like, you know, like, hi, this is, you know, I made up a name, or I'm just like, this is from the accounting department. You know, I'm the accounting department. It's like, we were just wondering, like, you know, you're behind in here, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I had a whole like personality I had to like get into to write it.
Yeah.
Because like I always feel really bad asking.
Dude,
for checks.
That is real, man. So like,
yeah, I had to fake it.
So that combined. Which,
okay, we don't fake that anymore. We have an actual person.
That's a real person.
She's a real person, yeah.
Okay, but wink. Okay.
Yeah. They can't see us. There's no video.
Yeah, well, that's why I said wink. Ding.
Oh, yeah.
But that's very real, is because that whole feeling you were talking about, like, I'm surprised people are paying me for this. You have to go through that twice when you work on net 30-day terms and you're doing your own accounting, because you sell it to someone, you go, oh, it feels weird that they're even willing to bring it in, because to me, it's still this thing that's completely made up. And then all of a sudden, 30 days later, 40 days later, you're like, uh-oh, I haven't gotten a check for that yet. And you have to like follow up again and be like, hey, inside, I'm feeling that it's weird that you're even paying me at all. But also, I need that check because you kind of promised that it would be. And what I realize is most of the time, people are like, oh, yeah, forgot. Here you go.
Yeah.
But then every once in a while, you have to deal
majority of the time.
Almost
that's
always
what it is. Yeah. It's nothing malice. It's not like they're trying to keep the money away or like, you know, whatever. So here's what I tell people. The worst for me is when we do wedding catering. And it's like, and most of the time, you're dealing with the bride and groom.
Mm-hmm.
And I've cooked for so many weddings. And now what I say when we first start like talking about wedding, it's like, do you have a wedding planner, or do you have like somebody the day of, and that can finish the balance or pay for the balance of the, you know, of the event. So we usually have a percentage breakdown. It's like 15% right when we agree, 50%, you know, like half, like, you know, a week before, and then, you know, full amount, you know, or the remaining balance when we finish the job. That's kind of our policy that we use, but we've changed it, and most people are just like, yep, here's the full check, which if they do that, it's like awesome. So The worst I've had was the bride and the groom was getting ready to leave. They were going on their honeymoon. And I learned from this situation. There's many situations like this. Was I was just like, oh, shoot. Like the remaining balance is like $3,000 or something. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to need that check before they go. And it's just like so awkward because like they have all these family around them. So I couldn't be like, hey. and I gave them.
Congratulations. Where's my money?
I gave them. Hey, we're all done. We're cleaned up. We're ready. We're rolling. Oh, great. Yeah. Thank you so much. This was so amazing. Our family loved it. Okay. We're all done. We're going to go now. We're all done. We're going to go now.
Cash or credit.
Yeah. And literally they're like, that's, thank you so much. And then like they turned around and walked away and they were like talking to other people. I'm like, oh man. And so I had to like, one of my buddies who was at the wedding I knew, and I'm like, hey, could you ask them? Because I tried 3 times in a very polite way. And you know, I mean, and at a wedding, especially bride and groom, they're pretty busy, you know, families around them, and you don't want to be like, no, can you want to finish paying this off? And so he's like, yeah, we'll do it. And he did, but then they're just like, oh shoot, we forgot our checkbook or whatever, and then we had to wait like 3 weeks for the money came through, and it kind of stank. And so from that situation, when we talk, you know, to people about doing this, we're like, hey, could you do you have a wedding planner? Do you have a wedding coordinator that we deal with? And if you can get the check to them, you know,
and yeah, that type of thing is something that I've encountered too, where I used to be like, oh, I will just answer everything and I will pursue anything. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, I don't even need to check up front if like, you know, credit or like, hey, is this a legit thing that we're doing? Mm-hmm. And what I've realized over time is that like business rhythm or like even just this is how we operate, getting that out there up front. Because without that, I've ran into the same thing where they're like, hey, I need coffee tomorrow. And I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, we'll make it work.
Yeah.
Whereas if they know,
and you're driving around 4 hours,
driving around 2 hours to get them the bag of coffee they needed or whatever.
Yep. Absolutely.
As opposed to upfront telling them, hey, we roast Thursdays, deliver Fridays. Mm-hmm. That's how it's done. Anything outside of that, just the way we go. This is just how it is. And when you're really small and first getting started up, you think it's more valuable to be that
because that relationship is valuable.
Yes,
it is.
But there's no reasonable person that if you tell them upfront, this is how we operate, there's no reasonable person that's going to get upset if you say, we can't do it. It's just...
So, can I'm just going to say this. Dude, I don't know if you'll cut this out, but whatever. I'm just going to say it. Is in being in the catering, you know, events business, you know, food business that we do, I'll be very upfront. I'm not trying to be crass or anything, but it's kind of like being a stripper, okay? Because it's like you do an event for a certain group of people and they had a great time and they're going to be the one to tell their friends and they're like, yeah, but he did something special for us. And then we get a call and they're like, hey, we heard you did this one special thing. They, you know, the Johnsons really loved it. They think that was amazing. We heard about it. We want that special thing you do too. And can we do something else? And so you're like, yes, we'll do it. For a price, you know, and so I always feel like, you know, an exotic dancer because it's always like, okay, when I get there, it's like, where do you want us to set up? We set up our stuff.
I maybe would have gone with car mechanic or something, but I'm with you.
You know, and then you get all the people that come up and goes, oh, we're so excited for this because the Johnsons told us what you did and it was amazing at their place.
Yeah.
And you're like, yep. And we're in the service industry, right? So you want to serve, you want to say yes to everything. But then when we first started, it was always saying yes to everything. But then we found out that it really took a toll on me. It took a toll on our staff. It took a toll on our company. Something that, and then realizing that it's okay to streamline a few things.
And then also most people are just asking to ask. Yeah. That's the thing is like most people.
Hopefully you keep that comment in there.
No, yeah, no, I don't edit this.
Okay. You're going to get some emails though.
That's fine. but the thing is like that's an important point because like being in the service industry, I think especially food-minded people have the mindset that I want to go above and beyond to give this person a great not only food or drink but experience. Even us not having a shop, I feel that way about our online orders. Mm-hmm. It's like I want the full experience to be exactly so early on. Hey, can you grind? Hey, I only like dark roast. Could you do this? we could do a dark roast. And then especially like wholesale customers would be like, hey, let's do a custom blend, and wanting to say yes, but that is a very slippery slope, especially in coffee. A lot of people yep. run into is every single person wants their own custom blend.
Absolutely.
But then all of a sudden, if you're selling a custom blend for every single person out there, all of a sudden you're doing however many different roasts. And then I go mm-hmm. to Jeff and be like, he's like, I'm doing like 5 pounds each of mm-hmm. all these different types for all these different customers. It's not sustainable.
Yeah.
And that's a very real thing. And most of the time I've realized if someone says, hey, can you do this for us? And you say, hey, this is how we operate. Outside of that, we just can't do that. We can do it within these set parameters. Yep. And they go, oh, okay, I understand.
Yeah.
And then if someone really gets upset, you go, and I remember this line you told me is you just look at people and you go, who hurt you?
Yeah, that's why when people get angry at you and they say these things, you're like, hey, I'm sorry that your father went to get milk 35 years ago and he never came back and that you're still waiting on the porch.
And that's like the people that get upset with you about something reasonable. Yeah. It is funny. You go, generally, this is not about coffee. This is not about the food.
This is about your therapy that you're not going to anymore.
Something else happened and I'm getting the bad end of it here.
And I'm sorry that the world hurt you like this. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing you really have to learn. Cause so there is this beauty about being this quote unquote small business, doing everything grassroots. Yes, there's a beauty to that. And if you want to stay, people want to stay that route, sure, awesome. But there comes a point, as any business owner knows, you and I both know, that if you want to expand, there are systems in place. Like, for example, why does, let's just say, Burger King, McDonald's, KFC, why do these, you know, companies grow? Because they have a system.
Yeah.
And it's consistency.
Yep.
You know, and that's like, okay, so I'm going to straight up say it. I love McDonald's breakfast. People will go, oh, well,
that might be the most controversial. I know, thing you've it said might on get canceled so far.
Okay, but I go to McDonald's breakfast not because it's like flavors blows me away. It's consistent.
That like it's, dude, Starbucks, like, man.
Yeah,
anybody in coffee that is going to say that Starbucks doesn't have amazing speed and service is out of your mind.
Yeah, so these companies are big because they have systems in place that do a good job, and that's how they expand. And when they come into a town, they say, we put our systems here, and then people come work for us, and we plug them in. It's a plug and play system.
Dude, Jimmy John's grew faster than anyone because of that. They go, absolutely, we have solid sandwiches, but all we are is freaky fast.
Yeah. And so there's nothing wrong with that. I think that, you know, like, you know, you and I have talked about this, you know, where people think that, oh, you're a business owner, well, you probably vote this way, your political leanings are probably this way, and you probably do this and this, you know, and there's like a character to business owners, like, oh, you probably want this bill to pass because you're a business owner. No, at the end of the day, I'm so human that I have values and I have beliefs, and get to know me. Don't judge me on, you know, on I don't know, being a business person or whatever. So one thing is I struggle with, and I am still today struggling with, is that business aspect and then that heart aspect. You know, like is this purely a trend in a business where we're making money, or is this there is this heart where we believe in what we're doing, and there's a heart to it. And I think, so one of the things, I heard a podcast a while back where it said most chefs are 90% artists and 10% businessmen, or, you know, business people, business. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it really rocked me. That statement rocked me because mm-hmm. I was like, that's why a lot of restaurants fail because they're too into the quote unquote art of it. And they're not savvy in the business aspect of it. And so like, there are things that we do where I'm like, oh, like, I just feel like I don't want to do that because of, you know, kind of that, you know, that integral side.
Here's what I hear from coffee people. They go, well, I didn't want to be too salesy. I didn't want to come across mm-hmm. as too salesy. And I'm going to do an entire episode about sales because I think the negative connotation of that word is kind of ridiculous, because how is someone going to buy your product if you're not selling to them?
But I think the word sales comes with like that, like
used car salesman
who's like, you know, kind of like greasy guy who's just like, hey man, like look at this, you know, 250,000 mile car and it's great for you, man.
Yeah.
Like that's, I think that's where we get the condensation, but I don't think of it as sales. I think about like, why do I believe in my product? Mm. Why do I believe in what we're doing? You know, like, why do we want to come and be part of your guest experience for your, you know, son's graduation? Like, why should you hire us out? Because we want this experience to be flawless. We want people to love the food. We want when people come in and they get to enjoy the food and they get to be with your families, you know, your family, and get to be with your loved one after the year and a half that we've had, we want them to have that same feeling and that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where, you know, so, as I think about this, I'm just going, I'm not selling them anything. I'm just telling them, hey, this is our passion. This is what we do. This is our part of our vision, mission, values, and goals of what we believe.
Yeah. And that like, I think what truly great sales is if you're approaching someone because I have something that I think will make your life or your business better. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. That's the only reason I'm talking mm-hmm. to you. And so I've said this a lot before, but it's like, I only approach people with Folly Coffee if it makes sense.
Absolutely.
If I go with what you're doing, I mm-hmm. think we can improve the coffee side. I'm seeing the changing landscape of what mm-hmm. people are drinking. I'm completely focused on this industry and how it's changing. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an opportunity for what you're doing versus like, I think this connotation between sales is like, I have a commission. I want to make mm-hmm. money. Buy my product so I can make the money.
Yeah. And so one of the things that I really love talking to people about is the fact that, you know, if we're doing an event for you or if you're, you know, getting food from us, the one thing that we talk about is like, what are your needs? What do you want?
Exactly.
You know,
that's how every conversation starts with sales.
Because it's not like, oh, because if they're like, hey, we want a bunch of sandwiches and blah, blah. It's like, well, I bet you know, this other place could do it better than us. You know, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, or oh, here's our budget. Like the biggest thing I always ask is when people will say, hey, like we want you, we're doing this event. We want you, you know, to provide food. Where, when, what time, what's your budget?
Yeah.
You know, because like we can work within those realms. You know, if the budget is too small, then we'll just be straight up, hey, the budget's too small. You know, you want to feed this amount of people with this much? Like we're probably not in that budget range and it's okay, you know? But if it's like, hey, like we can fudge the budget a little bit, awesome. Let's talk about what we can do.
And that goes back to just like having those things up front is going to save you so much stress in the long mm-hmm. run. Because I think I was like, this is in starting someone. It's like, here's our price that we can pay for coffee. And I just like, no matter what, be like, I'll figure out a way to make this work. And then all of a sudden you're stuck in this partnership where you're like, I'm not making any money. And
resentment grows.
Or like we don't do this, but or I could go, oh, we could source a cheaper coffee and make mm-hmm. this. But then all of a sudden you're going away from what it is you're passionate about. Then long term, you've got this business where you're serving cheap coffee or you're not making any money. It's like a lose-lose. And so if you go back to them and just say, this is the lowest price I can possibly mm-hmm. go to make this work. Mm-hmm. And they say no, you go, okay, this, you know, here's another company I think you could work
absolutely.
With doing. But to go even back to your systems you were talking about for like McDonald's or, mm-hmm. you know, I referenced Starbucks or mm-hmm. Jimmy John's, is having those systems is so important because the running around for 3 hours for mm-hmm. one delivery and having to make things work all the time is not sustainable. And then I've learned the hard way over these few years is that what customers in general prefer over you being like, I'll have it there first thing and running around mm-hmm. for 3 hours. They prefer just to know how it works. Mm-hmm. So if they say, hey, can I get on my next delivery? If I can get it earlier, awesome. But the less they think about what it is that you mm-hmm. do, the better. So they I know they roast on Thursdays. I'll see if they have extra. If not, I know when I'll have it in stock next. Because which would you rather have if you're selling coffee? To think that, hey, maybe I can get it in tomorrow and I'll tell my customers we might be back in stock tomorrow on mm-hmm. this one product, or just say, hey, I know we'll have this back in stock Friday, but we're out of stock until then.
Mm-hmm.
That's less stressful, even though it seems like that might be a worse thing to be out of stock for mm-hmm. a couple of days.
Yeah. I think one of the things as you're talking about that I'm thinking about is most people, you don't know what you don't know, you know, and
that's business, like every single day, man, I go,
yep.
There are so many things along the way where I go, the accountant is a great example mm-hmm. where the second I started working with accountant realized, oh wait, you reach out to people?
Yeah. Where I'm like, why am I? Yeah. So
you collect the money.
I literally just had this conversation with our accountant today on the phone, you know, and she's like, oh, just send those invoices to me because we can, you know, cause we have a contractor where we can pay contractors out of our thing. So you're not having to figure out how to pay these bills through here. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like just like every month when I get these, you know, invoices, I'm like, are you telling me we can pay contractors out of here and I don't have to like individually like write stuff out anymore?
And then I'm like, oh, but I'm small, I'm scrappy, mm-hmm. I want to stay as lean as possible.
Yeah.
All right, you know, I cannot figure out these books. I have to hire somebody.
Yeah.
The collected checks that came in the next 2 weeks from her reaching out and saying, hey, paid for like the first 3 months of that service. Sounds like, oh, that's, but there's the you don't know what you don't know is such an important thing. And that's, I mean, that's literally what we're talking about right now, is going into business. What didn't you know?
Yeah. I also think too, as I think through this, is, and what I'm preaching to myself right now is this idea of, you have a team, you know, and you have to think bigger. So I still think, like with you and Monk Kitchen, and as we're building out V9, as we, you know, as there is this kind of like, you know, media, you know, media, whatever side, you know, with the company as a whole, the Hill Tribe LLC, I still think about it with the mentality of, oh, we're scrapping, we're doing pop-ups, and I don't ask for help. And that's my biggest failure, is I don't ask for, I have a whole team, I don't ask for help. And it's hard for me to ask for help because I don't know how. Asking for help is hard because you don't know how. I think most people don't ask for help, not because they don't want help, it's just they don't know how to ask for help. How to, like, to ask for help is very humbling, and it's also very difficult. And I think that that's the biggest thing. People don't realize that. And so even able to ask for help and then being able to say, hey, I don't really know what I'm doing here. Because like for the last 5 years, I've lived in my brain. I don't know something, I'm going to figure it out. If it's the right, wrong way, I don't know. I'm just going to figure it out. If it's not efficient, whatever, I'm just going to figure it out. You know, I made some really crappy business deals.
Yeah.
And I feel awful about it. And then when I talk about it, and when you have some friends who are like, I can't believe you did that. And it's just like, yeah, dude, I already feel like a piece of turd. Thanks for making me feel more like a piece of turd, you know? And so with all of that going on, it makes me fearful to ask for help. And I think that that's the biggest thing. I mean, like, for me, it's very humbling to, because I think that there's always a caricature of who people think you are. So I'll be really like real with you. Like, I think that sometimes people just think like, man, we see you on all these things. You're doing all these great things and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, this TV show here, newspaper here, media here. And I want to say that is probably like 0.9% of what, you know, what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, you get to see like, yeah, we have a fun moment. And then, you know, someone like Eater puts out a really great video, you know, but like what you didn't see was it was so freaking cold that day. My hands are so cold, you know, like I didn't want, like I was kind of miserable at the end, you know, on set. It was like 8 hours and out of it came like 12 minutes, you know, of content or whatever. And I think people, all they see then they're like, wow, yeah, this is great. But inside there's a, I don't know if you go through this, Rob, but like I have a loneliness, like inside there's a sense of loneliness. Like, that's great. People can, you know, say, hey man, like this is so awesome. You're doing so great. But then like when you come home and you're by yourself and you look in the mirror when you're, you know, for me, when I'm popping my contacts out, brushing my teeth at the end of the night, I look at the mirror and there's a sense of all the things that I failed at that day. You know, like you screwed up here, you failed here.
Or even when something's, this is where I get it too. This is a huge unexpected thing in that same line of thought. Is that you're thinking constantly about like, oh man, I can't, like if I could number the bad decisions I made.
Absolutely.
But then any success you have, because you failed so many times in the, even if it's not failure, but just I could have done it better, every new success you have, immediately start thinking about what am I doing wrong with this launch? And so like we've got two new chains we're launching with in the next 2 months. And my immediate thought was like, what am I not thinking of? Or yeah, like, absolutely. Oh shoot. How? And so this is how my thought process goes, is they go, hey, we're going to bring you into these 20 stores. I'm like, for 5 seconds, I go, awesome. And then immediately I go, okay, that means our grocery volume is going to change, which means I need to reach out to my distributor to make sure that the inventory they have is fresh, to make sure they have enough inventory to back the launch. Then after the launch, I need to predict how many cases each of these 20 stores are going to go to, despite having never sold in the stores before. So I have to predict what the backup inventory is needed. I need to make sure that Jeff has the green coffee ready to go and try to predict like 3 to 4 months volume based on that increase so that he can order the green coffee in time to be able to roast in time for this new launch. And then also make sure that the distributors have the new items set up. Each of them is set up with this new chain we're selling into. Make sure that the chains are aware at a manager level what's going on. Make sure we are all on the same page on timing of the launch. Make sure that those cases go out. Also, then when it gets to the store, how the heck are we going to get people to buy it once it's in the store? I need to set up new item forms with the different chains. I need to set up promotions, focus around key holidays. And so the sense of loneliness is real, because what people want to share with you in that moment is, whoa, new chain, killing it, dude. Yeah. Awesome, man. Gosh. Yeah.
And I think that there's this lie that's like, oh, all these great things are happening, you're probably banking. And I'm like, no, not really. Like, I find myself sitting in my truck in an empty parking lot, like, just my brain, like, I probably do this once a week, where my brain just shuts down and I just stare off, and I'm sitting there like the truck is on, but I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to overdramatic this, but like, really telling myself, okay, like, put your hand on the shifter and hit reverse and like drive out of here, you know, like, do you know what I'm saying? And I just sit there and I just zone out, and I'm like, I don't know. So here's the thing. When we first started this, man, I just wanted to cook food, to bring people around, cook food, and that's it. I did not expect for this to be where it is now. I did not expect to be the voice of Hmong food in America. You know, when a few of the first food writers started writing, and some of the bigger food writers started writing and saying, hey, how does it feel to be the ambassador of the food, Hmong food and Hmong culture to the nation? And I was like, I don't want that. I never asked for that.
Yeah, like,
and
I never signed that offer.
Yeah. And then what starts happening is then you realize that when you have all these young Hmong kids that are writing to you saying, hey man, like, I wanted to do this, but I also really love food, and I feel like this is a passion of mine, and I seeing that you're there, that's something that really inspires me. And then when you start seeing that, you're like, fudge, dude, like, now there's a sense of responsibility. Like, yeah. Okay, like, even though you don't want it, you are it. What do you do with it? And so being to maneuver that. And then on the other end, like, you know, in the last few months with just kind of this rise of anti-Asian hate stuff coming up, and then people message me and goes, hey, yeah, like, what do you have to say about it? And I'm like, not like I didn't want to say anything about it, but I'm like, what's there to say? It's wrong. Like, it's wrong. Like
that's a weird position, like, to be put in. Like, you need to speak for an entire race. And that's the funny thing, too, is, like, Asian hate is, like, not only just a specific culture, but you need to speak for an entire race because you are in that race.
Yeah.
So tell us what you feel about everything representing your race. That's such a wild position to be put into.
And so then to do a project with Minnesota Rice and then being able to say, look, I'm going to be, again, really real with you is I grew up in a predominantly white town, and I was very blessed to grow up with some really incredible teachers and incredible coaches who were white and who really allowed me to grow, right? I also learned, growing up in a white town, you learn how to talk to white people. Like, and like, when I say that, my white friends always laugh, but like, the truth of the matter is you learn how to talk to white people.
Yeah.
When you want to engage it with the white person, you do not make, like, you don't, like, when you and I talk, like, and if there's something you don't understand about the Hmong culture, you have a freedom to ask me, right? And I'm not going to take it as a sense of, like, I'm not going to be offended if it's, again, you don't know what you don't know, right? Yeah. So you'll ask me about this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, like, I'll just talk you through, like, oh, that's, you know, in our culture, this happens, blah, blah, blah. I think that too much in our culture now, it's scary for people to ask questions that they don't know, and then being demonized for it. So growing up in a white community, I learned that just a lot of white people just don't know what they don't know. And when they say things, it's not out of a sense of animosity. It's not out of a sense of, like, being quote unquote racist. It's just they don't know, and they probably don't say it right. And suddenly I have, you know, what I've learned is this ability to then say, hey, like, with a sense of grace, let me walk you through this.
Yeah.
Let me talk to you through this. So like, I didn't think that this was a part of cooking. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But now it has to be.
It is interesting.
Because it's like, we've turned food into political stuff. We turn food to
everything.
Yes. And I'm just like, I didn't want this. I want to build a fire, grill meats over it. That's all I really wanted to do. But it's a lot more than that. And again, then it comes into the whole thing of being a business person, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, now everything we do, everything I stand for, now it's like, oh, well, your company probably stands for that too. And it's like, no. We have many people within our restaurant who have different ideologies, different thoughts. They have different, we all vote differently. We all, have different ideology, whatever, right? But at the end, you know what our commonality is? Is that we want to serve people with great food.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about our restaurant. Is I don't care who you voted for, how you voted, whatever. At the end of the day, the one thing we agree on is that we want to serve people with great food, with great hospitality, and we want to take care of people.
And it's been interesting to me is I'm seeing this shift that intent has been deprioritized under words. So it used to be, let me try to figure out what this person's intention is saying that. Mm-hmm. Let me figure that out first, and then I'll address the words.
Yeah.
It's flipped now, and social media is obviously a big part of this, is like, I see the words, I'm angry, I'm going to assume their intent.
Absolutely.
And so what I'll do in conversations, if I don't know something, because of that, I'll just be like, hey, I want to just be straight up, my intentions are good here, so if I say something incorrectly or something that is, and see, even that, the phrase saying something incorrectly, it's not incorrect if you didn't know what was right in the first
place. Yeah, in doing that, you almost have to, like, every time you say something, you have like, okay, I'm creating a safe zone.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm also creating an area where it's like, this is a safe zone, but also, you have to have a precursor, like warning, I'm going to say something here, and hopefully it's not taken in the wrong way.
And that's, building trust with somebody, that's built over time. Like you and I think we just go into conversations knowing the intent's always good. I don't have bad intentions for you. I don't have bad intentions for anyone, really.
Yeah.
But with social media, it's just like, Facebook is just like, a breeding ground for anger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like, think that
we were running an ad, just a simple ad. Mm-hmm. We roast award winning coffee. And people are like, more of this bullshit. Get this off my face. I'm like, we're just a couple guys trying to roast coffee for you if you like coffee.
Absolutely. And I think that makes business, being a business, small business, hard.
It makes it more stressful when you do feel this pressure that you need to comment on every social thing going on. Oh,
that's the other thing we need as a small business. I just stop. Dude, reading comments is like picking a scab. I know what's under a scab. More blood gushing out.
Yeah,
but why am I picking on it?
And the way, because especially in this past year, I've had people DM me nasty things and be like, basically accusing me of really brutal things because I'm not posting about a topic. But the way I view it, I told you
I was sorry about that message, bro. Man.
The way I view it is I have my own personal opinions about things. Jeff has his own personal opinions about things. It's only two people in the company. I understand that. So we align on we align really closely on a lot of things. But who am I to post that Folly stands here if it's made up of two different people?
Absolutely.
And so,
I feel.
So, I express my own opinions about thing, and I do almost all of that in personal conversations because I think anything outside of personal conversations, there's like signaling going on that there's other intentions as to why it's being said. But outside of that, it's kind of like, have you seen Bo Burnham's new special on Netflix?
No,
don't watch it you're not in a good, healthy mental place at the time, dude. Because you're like, oh, Bo Burnham, awesome, like funny songs, great comedian, and you start watching it, and he starts hitting stuff so close on the head while living alone in an apartment making music that, like, by the end of it, you're like,
hello, darkness, my old friend,
dude. And where was I going with? Oh yeah, he has this entire song, or he has this bit where he's like acting like he is a PR agency or a marketing agency. Yeah. And it's like all about, well, yes, we sell, I don't know, animal crackers, but do people know how we feel about this? And the way he does it is so on the nose of how it's kind of changed of like, dude, we roast delicious coffee and we want you to enjoy delicious coffee. Mm-hmm. And that is the pressure you feel, whether it's manufactured, made up in my own head, or whether it's real, or whether that the two people on Instagram DMing nasty things don't represent 99.9% of people.
Absolutely.
It still felt as a business owner that's like, oh, am I not doing my part in things I feel strongly for? Or how do you approach that issue? And then it's like that becoming political, all of a sudden it's like, oh, am I now a product for this type of person? And that's an interesting one. And it's kind of the last thing I have on here about the biggest unexpected for me is like, so work-life balance.
Yeah.
That work, and you go, well, if you're a small business owner, you're probably, especially for at least 5 years, not going to have a good work-life balance. Yeah. I accepted that. But the thing I didn't know going into it is not only does your mind not turn off about the business aspect, about, oh my gosh, where am I? Am I going the right direction? Am I doing the right things? Is this going to be a good decision two years from now? But also that social aspect of it, that all of a sudden you're like, am I representing me and Jeff? Are we doing the right things as a company? Am I operating in the right way? It's impossible to turn off at any given moment.
Yeah.
And like that side of it is very hard to explain to someone that I go, even if I'm taking time off, you can't just tell your brain, hey, we're turning off this section of your brain for the weekend. Let's enjoy it. Versus when I had the more selling beer, so it's not a traditional job. But like that job, if it was the weekend, I was like, this is my time. And if there's a customer that needs something during this time, not my problem because it's not my company or whatever.
Yep.
Or even just like I wasn't worried about how because I didn't have to worry about that like, was the company culturally, nationally being represented fairly? Because it's just things that aren't on your mind. And that's a pretty wild thing that was totally unexpected on my end. And I have to imagine, based on what you just said, that the position you're in during this time, that's got to be pretty, pretty heavy at times.
Yeah, at times it is, you know, but at the end of the day, like, you know, kind of like, When you're talking about coffee too, you know, how you're saying like, we want to serve great coffee for everyone. And at the end of the day, we talk about, hey, we want to provide great food for people and we want to offer a sense of hope, you know, and when people come in and enjoy food, you know, with us and, you know, by us, we're here for you. You know, we're here for our community that's always been here for us. And on the other hand, like, it's really hard sometimes to separate like issues I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
From like, hey, like, is that what the company thinks? You know? And so sometimes I struggle with it, but at the end of the day too, I come to this conclusion where I'm like, man, like if you want to talk to me, don't talk to me through social media.
That's what I mean. Is
like, hey, if you feel like I'm doing something wrong, like,
you're going to comment on a post about it. Like, I don't even know you.
Yeah. And it's like, hey man, like you want, you know, like reach out if we can grab coffee for an hour together. And if there's time allotted, I'll talk to you, you know, but when we have this conversation, you can't come in guns blazing.
Yeah.
Cause you're not willing to listen. I only want to have conversation with people that are saying, I want to learn. And I want to listen. I'm not having conversations where I'm going to put myself in a situation where you come in and you're just like slinging crap at me, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like that. There, it does nobody no good. It doesn't. And so, we've been very blessed. I never had any situations like that. But I know that we've gotten comments about whatever. But a lot of these people who comment, I remember I responded back and I got nothing in return. So it's like, did you really want to have a conversation, or is this something you had to get off your chest?
And
you
know? I'd love to say, oh, I'm the person that I saw those nasty DMs or comments or whatever, and I ignored them because that's better for my mental health. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm gonna do a deep dive on who's messaging me. And both times it was like, oh, this person,
this is what they're doing.
All their posts, every comment they're posting, everything, all it is I need to find people to yell at them about what they're doing wrong.
And that's when you go, hey, I'm sorry your father left 35 years ago to get milk and never came back home. Okay, I'm so sorry.
Or the more simple, who hurt you?
Who hurt you?
Are you okay?
Who hurt you? Yeah.
But it's like this conversation is actually, it's funny because you go into this conversation, we had the intention of just talking about what is unexpected for you about small business. And even just the radical shift in this conversation about how like intense it gets and how emotional it gets. And like, these are like things that are sensitive to us. I think that's a really good representation for what running a business is like, because you think of it as like, It's this entity. It's not you. It's this entity. And you get that wallet. You pay for the things. You make money. You pay for more. And then all of a sudden, you realize you start peeling back that onion. And there's layers of like the financial side, the emotional side, the stress, the personal relationships, all these different things involved with it that you can even know about in theory. But it's so hard to know until you're living it.
Absolutely. I think the one thing, too, is decision-making. Like, that's one thing about, like, decision-making. And you, nobody ever knows it's the wrong decision until you know it's the wrong decision. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like a business mentor of mine, he, you know, we made this really bad decision for business work, you know, and I felt awful and I carried it with me for almost a year. And I just, I felt like a deer in the headlight. And when big decisions came up, I still thought about it. And I'm like, fudge, like I totally screwed that up. And he said, in that moment, did you make a decision with what you knew in that moment? Was it a good decision? I'm like, with what I knew? Yeah, it was a good decision. He goes, then that's it, man.
Yeah.
And this is a dude who's run like a investment firm. He's, you know, I mean, he's like, when he's like a dude who's like took millions of dollars, made more millions of dollars. You know what I'm saying? Like he's not, he's not like a little guy. He's like a big dude.
Yeah. The mistakes he's making are more money than we've ever had go through our businesses at any point.
Or will. Like, you know, and so when he said that to me, there was a sense of relief. Like, I'm like, shoot, I never thought about it that way.
And the other thing about decision making, when not only you are the decision maker, but also it's your business, is the direction of the business can go absolutely anywhere.
Yeah.
And so the decisions that are being made, I think people go, I'm a good decision maker. Somebody puts two options in front of me or three options, whatever, I can do it. The decisions you make when you're trying to guide things is, do I do this or any other way? So you're not choosing between two things and hoping one of them works out. You're saying, this is my decision, but there's an infinite number of different ways to go about this thing. Or just like, is this thing the right thing at all? Yeah. And so that is another interesting thing, that it's so easy to look back and be like, what if I should have done this or I should have done that? And that's really great advice of like, was it right at the time? Yes. That was a good decision. It didn't work out well, but at the time, that was the right decision. Even if it didn't work out, that's a great way to think about it.
I mean, it's like dating, right?
Go on.
Everything looks great at the time. we checked out the background, you know, but then like you're sitting there in the car and all four of your tires are slashed, you know, and you're like, I'm just kidding. I totally made that up.
I was gonna say, it's not a specific reference to any experience we've had, but
you only know what you know. You know, I think that guys like us too were control freaks, right? You want to see all the angles. You want to know, you know, the right and the wrong decisions. You want to be able to have a magic eight ball and tell us like, hey, is this the right deal to make? Like, I don't know. And nobody's going to ever tell you if it's the right deal or not to make, you know?
And then in the future, if you find success in any form, people go, oh man, this just comes natural to you. You're just like, figuring it out. And I go, I've made more wrong decisions than I have right. I've like lost in a lot of
different ways. It's like the Rascal Flatts song, bro.
Life is a highway?
Nope.
That's the only
God bless the broken road that led me straight to you. Every long lost dream. I mean, it is, right?
Yeah.
This is. I use that reference a lot.
Candy Bars is going to have to come to a part two. Because I actually have to. No. I wanted to continue this talk because I think, honestly, the way it got off the rails in the best kind of way is exactly what business is like. Like, you've got this track laid out. You go, this is how it's going to work. This is how we're going to go. And all of a sudden you realize, oh, yeah, the track is here, but I don't have a train. I have a boat.
Yeah. Wait, how do you drive a boat on the ground?
And you figure out, oh, wait, I've got a train now, but I don't have any fuel. And you got I got this. And you go, oh, but the track ends and all that kind of good stuff. But I actually do have to jet out of here pretty quick here. Cool, so we're going to do a part two with Candy.
You know what we should do? Let's bring candy bars here and actually eat them.
I think that's a great idea. That could influence some decisions.
I know.
So part two will be coming soon of where we rank our favorite candies and maybe even do some candy tests. Maybe we could even bring in some candies we've never had and discuss those.
Southeast Asian candies, brah.
I for real got to go. So I'm going to end this episode like I do every other and say, have a nice day.